From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast, hosted by Paul Hanley.
Welcome back to part two of my conversation with Professor Da Wei, Assistant President and Professor at the University of International Relations in Beijing. We pick up our conversation where we left off. And if you haven't already, I encourage you to go back and listen to part one, where Da Wei and I discuss Chinese perceptions of the Trump administration following the August 1st tariff announcements. In part two of our discussion, Da Wei and I shift our focus to evolutions in China's political, economic, and foreign policies, which are impacting the U.S.-China relationship. I hope you enjoy the episode, and if you do, be sure to rate us on iTunes. Please also be sure to follow us on Twitter at Carnegie Beijing and tweet us suggestions for future guests on China in the World podcast. Let me look at U.S.-China from a different angle, and this is something that I hear from Chinese scholars often, is that if you go back to the time of the normalization of U.S.-China relations, of course, at the same time was China's announcement under Deng Xiaoping that China would reform and open up. And what I hear from Chinese scholars is China's reform and opening and the normalization of U.S.-China relations are deeply intertwined,
yes,
that they're not separate, that from a Chinese standpoint, these are seen as viewed together. And so what they say to me is, as China's reform and opening stalls and in many ways reverses or retrogrades, it's no surprise to them that there's increased tension in the U.S.-China relationship, which says to me that's an acknowledgement that there are things happening here in China, that it's not all President Trump and the Trump administration, but there are developments here internally within China, politically, economically, even perhaps on the international side, that are impacting the U.S.-China relationship. Do you agree with that? And if so, what are some of those factors?
I totally agree with that. Actually, I published an article about the linkage you mentioned between the China-U.S. relations and the domestic politics.
Mm-hmm.
But not only in China, I mean in our two countries.
Mm-hmm.
On China's side, I totally agree with you about the story about 40 years ago when we normalized the bilateral relations. Actually, I can give you an evidence. Our two countries signed we announced the communique of the normalization on December 16th. 2 days later, the Chinese Communist Party have their third plenum of the 11th Party Congress. That was the beginning of the opening up and the reform. So
this is 1978.
Yeah, December 1978. Mm-hmm. So there are only 2 days.
Hmm.
Only 2 days after we announced this communique. So there are strong linkage. Mm-hmm. And today, I agree with you that the reform in China are encountering a lot of difficulties. And it's also become more and more controversial about China's future direction. So it's not a surprise that we have problems in our bilateral relations. Well, one thing I want to add is the domestic politics in the U.S. also mm-hmm. changed a lot. Mm-hmm. In late 1970s, and particularly in 1980s, 1990s, and in the first decade of this century, I think the U.S. benefit a lot from engaging China and from globalization. So engaging China is part of the process of globalization.
Mm-hmm.
So the U.S. benefit a lot from that. And also there is a strong support, domestic support in the U.S. for this engagement, for this globalization. But today, I think in the U.S. people began to you know, have their, your concern about the globalization. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people say, I'm not benefit from that process, no matter engaging China or from globalization. Mm-hmm. So the support of a strong bilateral U.S.-China mm-hmm. relations, mm-hmm. I think, declined. Mm-hmm. Just like mm-hmm. the support of the globalization declined in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So the change of the domestic politics in two countries, in both countries, I think, have a impact for the U.S.-China relations.
What is, and from the Chinese side, what's the biggest impact, do you think, in terms of on the domestic politics? What factor has impacted just the restricting or the abrogation of term limits? What do you think it is that's impinging on the U.S.-China relationship?
I think maybe on the in China side, I think people are what we are discussing are more maybe bigger issue. China, for in past four decades, China achieved I think a lot, but should we attribute, for instance, in economic reform, mm-hmm. we have the system called market economy, socialist market economy, but there is a basic debate here. Mm-hmm. So should we attribute China's economic success to market economy or to socialism?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because this is a socialist market mm-hmm. economy. Of course, it's
meaning
very hard.
Meaning the state aspect of it.
Of course, it's very hard to just cut this term into two, socialist or market economy. But if we have to choose which side is more critical for China's success in past mm-hmm, 40 years. Of course, a lot of people, particularly those reformers, mm-hmm. say market economy is the key here.
Yeah.
But some people say if we only pursue the market economy without a state support, probably we will fall into the middle income trap, mm-hmm. like many Latin American mm-hmm. countries, like many other developing countries. So even, for instance, in history, even Japan and Korea and Germany, I think when their economy grow very fast, actually the government also had a very strong support to the economic development. So on the left side, some people say the government support is critical for China's success and will be at least equally important in the future. While this is something the U.S. side oppose mm-hmm. dramatically, the U.S. mm-hmm. say, no, you are not market economy because mm-hmm. you are state-controlled economy. So when we made those achievements, people began to consider which is the key for China's past success. Mm-hmm. So there are different views here. Mm-hmm. Then mm-hmm. that make China domestically, we have a lot of debate, discussion on which direction should we go in the future.
Yeah. And these issues are right smack dab in the middle of these questions about reforms that China has announced it would make and that the international community in the U.S. Is hoping China will do. So clearly, what's going on domestically in China on the economic side is having an impact on U.S.-China relations. How about the international side? I mean, China has moved from Deng Xiaoping's axiom, Tao Guang Yang Hui, keep a low profile, don't overextend internationally, to a much more ambitious international strategy. How is that impacting on U.S.-China relations and how the world may view China and China's rise?
Yes, China's foreign policy has become more proactive in past 10 years, I will say. Actually, before the 18th Party Congress, that was 2012. Before that, the Tao Guang Yang Hui, or keeping low profile strategy, was already heatedly debated.
This is President Hu was...
Yes. Because basically the argument was China has been so big, you know, now, no matter economically or militarily, so you cannot keep low profile. Mm-hmm. You cannot hide yourself you are too big to hide.
Mm-hmm.
So China should be proactive. I think that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, China become more active in international relations, particularly in this region. Of course, I think it's naturally, I can understand, I think it's understandable that the US and the neighboring countries feel nervous about China, because not only because China is big, China is a strong player, but China is a communist country, communist party lead country. Mm-hmm. So ideology factor, I think, is very important factor here. So here comes a communist country who have very powerful means. So neighboring countries and other Western countries feel nervous.
Mm-hmm.
So particularly, I think the, for instance, in the East Asia region, in this region, Asia Pacific, I think it's so crowded that China and the US are both here. China want to be, because we have more, we have bigger power, we have more means. So China want to improve its security.
Bigger power than previously.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, mm-hmm. Than previously. I mean, China want the security environment here, mm-hmm. Safe environment here in the region, while the U.S. is in this region,
mm-hmm.
in Japan, in Korea, you have allies here. So it's very close to China.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have clash. I mean, we have conflicts mm-hmm. over like South China Sea and other issues. And for the U.S., you know, the U.S. want to prevent other dominant power to rise in the region while China is rising.
Mm.
So I think the change of China's foreign policy, of course, is a factor. Then when Obama administration staged their rebalance strategy, it's basically be viewed here in China as a strategy against China,
mm-hmm.
designed primarily target at China. So then that changed China's assessment of international environment.
Mm-hmm.
Many Chinese believe that the external environment of China has become bad because China's rise, because of the rebalance strategy. So we reinforce each other, I think. You can also call this security dilemma.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. So, Dawei, where do we go from here? As you mentioned, the August 1st announcement by President Trump of the additional $300 billion in tariffs, even though he has now staggered them a bit, has had a big impact on Chinese thinking. Is there still a way to work with President Trump and the Trump administration to reach a deal on trade and economics? And then how do we deal with the rest of the broader aspects of the U.S.-China relationship?
I personally still want the two countries to strike the deal for the benefit of the two countries. Countries suffer, I think.
But as you say, there's a view in China that even if Trump agrees to something, there's no confidence that he'll stick with that he may turn shortly after that. How does the Chinese side deal with that?
I think even we are not so confident about the commitment of Trump administration, I think we should still have a deal. I think that will give the economy, the markets, not only China and the U.S. markets, the world market, some confidence, or at least some positive signals. I think we are facing a possibility of a global recession. That's, you know, too dangerous for everyone. So we need to send some signals.
So how does the Chinese side then deal with those issues where it had looked like China was going to make commitments on those structural economic issues, but once it was opened up to a larger political group, there was some resistance because of different interest groups and
how does China deal with that?
I don't know if it's possible for the Trump administration to accept a smaller deal. I mean, not a so comprehensive one, not so ambitious one. Because if we have a very comprehensive and if we talk about this kind of comprehensive deal, it's very difficult to reach to strike the deal. B, it's very difficult for the two countries, particularly for China, to fulfill its commitment, because the reform is a longer process. Even we have a deal, probably it needs several years to fulfill China's commitment. So
you're saying a deal to be reached, the U.S. side would have to accept a more modest set of commitments by China on the structural issues.
And yeah, or maybe we can put some structural issue aside, if that's possible. I don't know.
Hmm.
Can we just reach a deal about the balance of trade, trade balance, or can we just reach a deal on IPR? I mean, is that possible? I don't know. If the Trump administration say, I can only have this one, mm-hmm. I already have it on the table, you have to accept it completely, I think the chance will be not very big, I think.
Yeah. We're moving into a political season in the United States with a presidential campaign coming up. As Chinese look at this next presidential election, is it better for China if President Trump is reelected, or is it better for China if a Democrat comes to office?
I think the majority view here is no matter who is in the, or which party is in the, I mean, who is in the White House, the change, the shift of U.S. China policy has already happened. We won't get back to the old days. So, of course, we want the president, the future president, no matter it's President Trump or someone from Democratic Party, we want the next administration to be more stable, to be more predictable, reliable. So we can achieve that goal with President Trump. I think it's possible to because that will be his second term. So if he got reelected, so I think we can achieve that goal with second term of Trump administration. It's also possible to reach that goal with the Democratic White House. So it's I think we are very, very cautious to say which one is better. It's not for diplomatic reason. I mean,
yeah,
it's
well. Let me ask you this way: a Chinese scholar said to me yesterday,
yeah,
that he hopes that President Trump stays in office because President Trump is undermining U.S. global leadership. He's damaging the U.S. domestic political environment. He's limiting the ability of the U.S. to intervene internationally. That President Trump has weakened the U.S. far more than he's hurt China. And if all countries in the world came together, they would not be able to hurt the United States as much as President Trump has damaged the United States. What's your reaction to something like that?
I think that scholar went too far. I agree with what he said, that I think President Trump is hurting the U.S., but he is also hurting China. He is also hurting other countries. So do we hate the U.S. so much that we want the U.S. to be hurt, even if China was hurt?
Even if it means China gets hurt.
Yes, I think.
And the global economy.
Yes.
And
so if you don't like the U.S., okay, but do you really want the U.S., to be injured while others be killed and injured too?
That's a very good point.
Yeah. So I personally still hope that the two countries can reach the agreement sometime this year, or maybe in January, February, but I don't have any expectation after that. I mean, after February, I think the primary will begin. I think the window of opportunity will close. So we can, what we can do is only, you know, watching the TV to, you know, to follow your primary and the general election, and then wait for next administration, no matter it's Republican or Democrats. But after that, I mean, after 2021, January 2021, you will have another administration. I think the two sides can still explore the way to have a limited competition or healthy competition. I think what we cannot change is the U.S.-China policy has shifted from engagement strategy to maybe competition strategy. We cannot change that. We cannot reverse that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we can do in the future, particularly with next administration, no matter who is president, I mean, is try to define what kind of competition we will have. Yeah, so we don't want it a zero-sum competition. And I don't want our two sides to... because in the competition, you have a goal. What is the goal of the competition? I don't want the goal, our respective goal... to kill the other side,
to damage ruin, the other, to undermine the other side.
To undermine, I think that if that's true, that will be a disaster. So we need to define our competition after 2021. And that's also a reason why I want a deal this year.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a deal, we will lay a foundation for the future.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't have the deal, it harms the market economy and it will make us even harder for next administration to work, the two countries to work together.
I agree with all of that. Mm-hmm. And I hope to see a deal soon to set a more positive atmosphere so that we can work on some of the other issues that we have in the relationship. It is not that once we strike a trade deal, everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
We've got a lot more to work on. And as, my former boss in the White House, Steve Hadley, says, we have to figure out whether we can be strategic competitors, which we're going to be competing more in the future. That is, I think, something everyone expects. But can we be strategic competitors and strategic cooperators at the same time? And can we forge a new framework to be able to do that? That's the challenge, I think, more long term. So yes. I agree with you. Thank you very much for sitting down to talk to me for the China and the World podcast and your candid views. Always appreciate it. It's always a
thank
pleasure.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's a great honor. Yes,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining the China and the World podcast. Be sure to check out more content from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center on our website.